Today, warning, never, ever, ever buy a unit. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Joe Wilkes is back for another chat. Hi, Joe, how are you going?
Hi, very well. Good, mate. Yes, just drying up out here.
You're up in far north Queensland, and the internet connection up there is, well, talk about a wet piece of string. It's not very good at all. So you might freeze and you might wobble a bit. But anyway, we'll give it a go because there's a really important...
All sorts can happen.
Exactly. It's a conspiracy.
We can go from first world to third world in about 10 minutes.
Yeah. But there's a very important conversation that we need to be having, I think, about the property market, and specifically all of the focus that there is on units and particularly high-rise development and some of the gotchas around that. And two contextual inputs. The first input is that ASIC is actually now reviewing whether you can actually put more property into your superannuation fund. Funny that. And the other is, of course, that the leaked government document from Treasury relating to the Productivity Commission conversation next week about how to improve productivity in Australia seems to have coalesced around, well, we need to actually reduce the restrictions on planning, and we need to actually get more people to build higher. So there is a very significant imperative being forced into everybody's heads about build up. That's the way to solve everything, but not so fast.
I totally agree with you, Martin. I think that there's been a long-running agenda to get people into smaller units, one- and two-bedroom apartments generally, and it's been happening everywhere. It's not something that is exclusive to Australia. It's happening in New Zealand. It's happened in the UK. The UK, 80% of what's been built in the last 10 years has been one- and two-bedroom units. So there is this movement towards getting people into heavily densified property arrangements where people are basically living on top of one another. And they're not cheaper to build in terms of the actual construction costs. If you have the land, it's cheaper to build a one or two story unit in most occasions, because the piles, the steels and everything else are a lot cheaper. But my view, right or wrongly, the only reason they're looking to listen to me these days, I think it's part of an agenda. And the agenda really has, it's multifaceted, and it's happened over the last 100 years. It's geared at trying to get people into these highly densely populated areas where basically you just don't have any energetic space. And by energetic space, I mean people don't have the space to be, to play the music, to live an uninterrupted life. And all it takes in most of these high-rise developments is a couple of arseholes, and you know, trust me, there are arseholes everywhere. Everybody's got one, but there are plenty of them around. All it takes is a couple of arseholes in a block of flats or an apartment block, and that can change the experience for everybody else who's there. Now, there's lots of reasons I think that they've moved us into these cities. It's happened over here. I suppose in the UK, it happened back in the, you could go back as far as the Scottish tenement buildings at the turn of the last century, century before last. But what I think they're doing is they're trying to disconnect people from the land and from an energetic space. Our bodies are meant to be grounded. I don't know if you ever got grounded when you were a kid, Martin. You're probably too well behaved, but I used to get in shit all the time, so I was grounded for most of my teenage years. And it's currently used as a form of punishment. You get grounded because you've done something wrong and you're in trouble. But grounding is actually something that's really important for the human body. That's one of the reasons that I have lived in flats in the past and apartments, but I won't live in one ever again, because you're too far away from the ground. And as human beings, we are meant to discharge an energy towards the earth. And having a garden, having the ability to step outside bare feet, is something that they don't want us to have. It's if you look at, and I'd be interested to see if there is an ability to do a study on this. Nobody's ever done it as far as I'm aware, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if people who live in flats and apartments have much shorter lifespans than those who live in houses with gardens where they can get outside and put their feet on the earth. So the push to get people into these high-rise developments is a form of control, in my view, to stop people's ability to cleanse themselves from the earth. And there are other more sinister things that could be considered. If you look at the lockdowns in China, go back to 2020, 2021, if you want to depopulate, getting people depressed in a flat and have them jump out the top of the bloody building is an incredible way of reducing population. And if you want to lock people up again, and who knows what the hell's going on these days, but if you were to lock people up again, it's far easier to police a apartment block with 200 people living in it than it is 200 individual houses. All you need is a robot dog at the bottom with a machine gun, and that pretty much does your policing for you. So the movement is deliberate. People talk about, and even in New Zealand, I've heard people say, oh, we've got a shortage of land. There's no shortage of land. What's happened is there's been a misallocation of business districts, work districts and work areas, where people have crowded themselves into the cities. You've got most of the immigration happening in Australia at the moment. The people that are coming in, they're going to Melbourne and they're going to Sydney, and they're really not going to the rest of the country. Not from what I've seen. It's a very, very different demographic. So it's that enclosure of people in these apartments, and that mixing of energies, mixing of ethnicities, mixing of diversity, which is, I think, going to lead to a load of social problems going forward, as we've seen in the UK, where some places are ghettos, and these are fat flats that were built in the 50s and 60s and 70s. Gradually, the demographic of the environment changes. And by energy of environment, I'm talking about people's cohesion and trust. And those things are infectious. So if you're in an area where everyone feels threatened and fearful, and that could be because there's two or three bad eggs in an apartment block or in a development, that will change everybody's feeling of how they are in terms of their physical well-being. So it's deliberate, that's what they're building. That's every planning application that's getting passed is, in the UK, it's turning high street, even the banks now, they're turning into a coffee shop at the bottom and then flats above. The change in use from business use into apartment blocks, which has been happening in the UK for probably 15, 20 years now, where disused offices are just remodeled, rehashed, and you've got these really terrible conversions, some of them, of buildings that aren't fit for human beings to live in. But we're dealing with government structures and a power system that doesn't want human beings living well, and would rather have human beings living stressed, fearful, and worried about their environments than happy, free, and cooperating in neighbourhoods who are all getting along. And that, I think, is something that is plainly obvious now.
Well, there's two observations. The first is, of course, you've got the World Economic Forum. You won't owe anything and be happy because effectively you'll be renting for life. And we've got a greater proportion of people now renting than ever before. The number of people who actually own their property outright is dropping. And of course, a lot of people have mortgages. The second point, of course, is that the live on top of everybody else lifestyle means it's more difficult to drive and get around. And so you have these 15-minute cities. We want people to walk and cycle, not actually own a car. But actually, if you have a car in these high-rise areas, it's almost impossible to use because the congestion is just ridiculous. There's just too much, roads, not enough capacity. And of course, everybody complains then about the transition period from one side of a city to the other is now slower than it was in the Victorian era in the UK, for example. Yes. So that's really, really efficient. But the third point is, if you actually look at surveys of people and that sort of the happiness indicator, it's absolutely shown in some of the research that people who live in high-rise properties are less happy. Why? Because there's more surrounding noise. And as you say, you only need a few bad apples in an apartment block and everybody gets some, you know, a headache. I used to live in an apartment briefly when I came to Australia down in Kirribilli, and the people next door had a baby, and that baby would relentlessly start crying at about 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. And so not only were they actually kept up by it, but all
of the... That's what they do, Martin. What they do.
It shouldn't be allowed. but the point is, you know, you dealing with your kid crying in the middle of the night is your problem. Absolutely, your decision. But if you actually have six people living in surrounding apartments, all woken up because the planning rules and regulations on noise mean that effectively noise just transfers from floor to floor to floor. And the going back to what I said about the paper from Treasury, they're suggesting that the construction rules should be loosened, and things like noise transition and transfer. Well, it's not that bad. And of course, you look at New South Wales. New South Wales has proposed smaller apartments, apartments with less light coming in, to try and actually cram more and more and more people into smaller and smaller and smaller units. And, you know, it seemed to me that we're mirroring Hong Kong. Now, okay, Hong Kong is a somewhat different place with a smaller geographical footprint. But, you know, do we really want to make the centre of Sydney and, you know, the suburban North Ryde, for example, a classic example in and around Sydney, it's becoming more and more like Hong Kong. You know, we've got quite a lot of land, actually, in Australia, if you think about it. The other side of it is when you actually look at the economics of it, as you said, the costs of actually building, if you build up, the costs actually get very significantly larger very quickly. So if you build a high rise, you know, the actual investment that's required, even on a per unit basis, is quite high. There's a lot of concrete, carbon, as well, by the way. And the other interesting observation is the maintenance costs over time are actually a lot bigger. And of course, with the low quality of construction that we're getting in a lot of the high rise as well, I see it through my one-to-one conversations very regularly. There are a lot of people who are spending a lot more than they thought they were going to spend on the strata fees, because the strata fees go up because of all the maintenance costs. Now, that's something else that people don't factor in when they make a decision. And then the final point is, if you actually stop and think about it, and what we're doing is we're concentrating people more and more into smaller and smaller areas, as you say, for control and everything else, with degrading lifestyles. What about the rest of the country? And the thing I'm interested in is there's actually more and more of a sort of coherence around just these major urban centres. And what's that about?
Yeah, it's... but we're easier to control if we're all crammed into one space. If you've been a bit, you talk about concentration camp, that's pretty much what these apartment blocks are. I think if you look at how it's happened, I mean, it really has escalated since the 70s in the UK. 50s, 60s, they started building apartments and stuff post-war, started in London or the other cities where there had been bombing damage, and it became justifiable to put apartment blocks up. Well, there were 3, 4, 5, 4-story apartments, but only a couple of roads in the centre. Everything else was semi-detached houses built in the 30s, and then another load of houses built in the 70s that were primarily detached units. Now, if you go to some of the sprawl towns and the towns that used to be industrial, I remember getting invited to pitch for some business for a block of 130 flats back in about 2013, which had been converted from an old office, government office building. And those 130 flats came with a combined total of 23 parking spaces. So can you imagine, you know, 130 flats, most of them are two bedrooms, so assume couples, but, you know, maybe there's 390 people, one and a half person per unit. These properties were shonky, built by a developer who basically bought this building off the council somehow. Who knows? And but the 30 parking spaces were never going to be enough because there was never anywhere else for a car to be parked within. You know, this building was built so that you could walk from the train to work, but nobody ever parked a car there to work there. So but living there, you need, you know, most people would want a car outside. So I haven't been back there since, and who knows what that's looking like now. But the other thing, returning to grounding a little bit, and also energies, because energies are transmitted. And during the whole lockdown stuff, we were all told to keep 6 feet apart, and they had this 666 on the old little circle. I don't know why it was 666, just to remind you to stay 6 feet apart. But energies, I think, also get transmitted down to the earth, and that's why whenever you go to a hotel or whenever you go and buy a really posh apartment, the most expensive one is always the one on the top floor. And that's because that's where they're not getting covered in everybody else's energy when they go to sleep. So the energy's dropped back down to earth. And if you're the poor fucker at the bottom, you're getting covered in everybody else's bad day. Because you might live on the bottom floor of Puff Daddy's apartment up at the top where all sorts of horrible stuff's going on. And you're getting covered in that. You wake up in the morning feeling knackered because Diddy's had a party upstairs on the top floor. So it's something to consider. And I don't think people realise that these apartments, they're not good for your health. I'm sure there are some lovely blocks and there's some, you know, some amazing builders, and I've seen some stuff in London that was done by Barclay Group, which was amazing, but you still couldn't pay me to live in these apartments that were 1 or 2 million quid at the time. It's going back 15, 20 years ago, because I just don't believe that as human beings, we're meant to be too far away from having our feet on the ground. You and I go for a walk most days. We're not spring chickens anymore, but we can still walk a little bit. If you're literally living in an apartment, going downstairs from your box into your box car, which might be a Tesla electric thing that you're getting radiated on, and then you go and sit in front of a computer screen all day where you're probably in another box surrounded by energies, you're not ever getting any time to recalibrate your being and to just offload all the crap energies that have been surrounding you all day. So then you go back to your apartment and you've got some drug dealer who's up on the top floor who basically scowls at everybody the minute he sees them in the lift. It's not a nice life. So I think it's deliberate, because all it takes in any of these things, you know, block of 200 people in an apartment block, all it takes is two or three arseholes to ruin the experience. And that's why they've done it, because they don't want us having happy, fulfilling lives where we're enjoying the outside and enjoying the space that I suppose the quarter acre blockers that came over in the 70s to Australia, at least they got that. These days, I think it would be very different for many of the recent arrivals who probably crammed 6, 7, 8 people into 2 and 3 bedroom units in Sydney and Melbourne. And I feel for them. But it's probably a better lifestyle than the one they've come from.
Well, that's true. I suppose if you've been brought up in an area of the world where the norm is pile high and you live in very small boxes, and then you come to Australia and you discover there's another box. Oh, it's slightly bigger and it's not piled quite so high, so maybe it's okay. But you've got to ask the question.
Space is different. Space is different, I think. If you're 5'2" or 6'2", the feeling of space is different.
Well, that could well be. Two other quick observations. The number of times I have people complaining about the lifts not working. So quite often, you know, you live on floor 32, but you can't actually take the lift because the lift is broken. So that's quite an interesting observation. And, of course, you are also caught if you're actually got health issues and you can't literally take the stairs. So, you know, are you trapped in the place that you've got there? The other interesting observation is that when you look at the age distribution of flat occupation, it's really quite interesting, because there are, of course, a lot now of younger people just starting out with a family who are actually living in these dog boxes. So when you think about that, what does that do for the family and for the little kids growing up?
What does it do exactly? What does it do for the children and their experience of childhood, adolescence, and moving forward? I mean, my adolescence, I was getting grounded all the time, but you know, normally because I've been out too late, and often because I've been enjoying myself outside. So it's it's societal things that we're not thinking about what's good for the human being in and the family, and instead it's I believe it's a deliberate measure to create more stress, anxiety, fear, and confusion.
Yeah, and the final point I just wanted to make as we come to the end of the show, Joe, is quite often these apartments are actually owned by property investors. And those property investors may be living somewhere else completely. Maybe they're living in those larger acre blocks, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, they don't care. I think that's, it's a shame. It's a shame that it's been encouraged, because the property investors have largely kept the market going in Australia, New Zealand, and less I think in the UK. UK, the last three and a half years in the UK, I have to say, I think I might have sold one house out of a few thousand that the business sold. We might have sold one or two to investors. They've really not been in the market since the interest rate changed. They've obviously less negative gearing and all of that stuff, but. Yeah, it's a parasitic world, isn't it? When we're building things to keep people living in environments that you wouldn't want your own children living in.
Spot on. Well, I think that's been a very important conversation, Joe. And for anybody thinking of buying a high rise, just think very, very carefully. If you're a property investor, well, maybe. But if you're somebody who's aspiring,
don't buy one and don't live in one.
Exactly right. Joe, thank you very much. I really enjoyed that. And I'm sure we'll pick up the conversation again and pull this mad world apart a bit more.
Oh, why not? Why not? Let's have some fun.
Okay. Thanks, Joe. See you later.